Welcome to Dodgers Daily. Casey Porter here. So glad that you decided to tune in. No doubt about it, it was not the weekend that Dodgers fans were looking for. It was not the homestand. Anytime you lose three series at home to the Padres, the Nats, and then most recently the Mets, that is not what Dodgers fans are looking forward to or looking for. But if there was ever a day that was going to make you feel better about losing a series, today would be it. So the Dodgers lose 2 out of 3 to the Mets. And I tell you what, it was kind of one of those deals to where it felt like the Dodgers were swimming upstream the entire weekend. And it also felt like every time the Dodgers got close to the Mets responded and the Mets would come out with their offense. And it was frustrating for me for the simple fact that the Mets, they were walking guys, they were making errors, they were leaving the door open for the Dodgers offense to win games. But the Dodgers, every time they got close, the Mets then would make a big pitch, they would get out of a jam, and then they would score a run, and it just felt like the Dodgers just never could catch up on Friday or Saturday. So the Friday game, Yoshinobu Yamamoto gave up 3 early runs, got into the bases loaded jam, and I'll tell you what, there's good and bad. The good is, and there's good and bad to every pitch he threw, the good and bad to the splitter is, the splitter was a very, very, very good pitch. But, hey, he only threw it in the zone, I believe it was 37% of the time. So what made it good was that he was making it look like a strike, and then Mets hitters thought it was going to be a strike, and they swung at it a lot when it tumbled out of the zone, and they couldn't hit it. So we got a lot of swing and miss on that splitter because of that. My concern with that is moving forward, though, as major league hitters start identifying his splitter and seeing it more, if he's only throwing it in zone 37% of the time, what happens if they don't swing at that pitch moving forward? Of course, that's the first time those Mets hitters had seen that. Maybe they saw it in the World Baseball Classic. I don't know if any of their hitters had or not. But as a team, that was the first time the Mets had seen that splitter. So they were swinging at it out of the zone. And he threw that splitter a lot. As a matter of fact, he threw a splitter more than any other pitch. And his curveball was like bipolar. I mean, it was like he'd either throw a perfect curveball and it'd be a great pitch, or he'd throw a curveball that was very hittable. I mean, the curveball definitely was hittable. You could tell he was trying to throw that curveball for a strike just to get another pitch, just to get the hitters off of his fastball, because his four-seam fastball has been getting hit. So there were some things that were interesting to evaluate as far as, hey, moving forward, what will Yoshinobu Yamamoto be based on what you're seeing with his performances? But I will say this, the fact that he got 6 innings out of that performance, that was a really, really, really big deal for the Dodgers, for the simple fact that we've already seen all the injuries with the bullpen. And so because of that, you need your start. Okay, so if you're going to have all these injuries in the bullpen, Kyle Hurt just went on the IL. We've seen all that. Emmett Sheehan's already on there. Blake Treinen's still there. Bruce Dark Gratterall. All of that. Okay, you need your starters to go 6 innings, period, end of discussion. Doesn't matter if they give up 700 runs. You need the innings out of them just to save your bullpen, because if you don't get 6 out of them and they're still not winning games, now you're taxing your bullpen while not. At least if you're going to lose a game, don't do it where you're overtaxing your bullpen to a point to where now you're going to lose games tomorrow, the day after that, because your bullpen is worn out. So that brings you to your bullpen. Are you worried about Joe Kelly? Are you worried about Ryan Brazier? Thing about Joe Kelly, his ERA in the last 7 outings for him is right around 2.38, somewhere in there. So the actual results for Joe Kelly in his last 7 outings have been good. But if you look at, I believe it's 10 innings in that span, he has like 4 walks. Right, he has like 7 strikeouts and 4 walks. It literally right now, when Joe Kelly is throwing strikes, when he is in the zone, he's elite. I mean, he's 98 to 100 miles an hour. His ball moves. It's absolutely dirty. It's absolutely nasty. But unlike Yoshinobu Yamamoto, almost in the exact opposite end, hitters have seen him so much, they know which pitches not to swing at. So it seems like every single pitch that Joe Kelly is throwing that doesn't land in the zone, it seems like every single time hitters are laying off of it, and they're forcing him to come in the zone. And when he does that, he's getting hit a little bit. He's getting behind in the count. But having said that, the results for him have been good in the last seven games. 238, I believe it's 238 in the last seven games for him. What about Ryan Brazier? Is he somebody that you're concerned about? Now, if you go back and you look at his major league track record, which the Dodgers love these guys that have track records, because many times your history is the best indicator of what you're going to do in the future, right? If you look at Ryan Brazier's past, he does have some track record of being really good and then being really, really, really average after having a good year. So that is, from a track record perspective, something to definitely, definitely, definitely be worried about. You hope, though, that adding that cutter that he added was going to be an absolute game changer for him, and therefore he could stay away from, you know, like he's done maybe in the past, where you have an average year after having a good year. So Ryan Brazier, he struggled for the Dodgers to this point, and he is one of their, we've talked about the different layers and waves of bullpen arms. He's definitely one of the A-team bullpen arms that I think the Dodgers are relying on to be part of that first wave. You're talking about Daniel Hudson, Evan Phillips, Ryan Brazier, and then, you know, Joe Kelly. And then if you get Blake Treinen and Brusdar Graterol back, I think that probably would solve a lot of issues as well. So Gavin Stone got the ball on Saturday. It was another frustrating game. And for Gavin Stone, it was all about the changeup. He was just simply not able to get the changeup in the zone. And because he wasn't able to get the changeup in the zone, he didn't have a swing and miss pitch. I mean, we all know the swing and miss pitch for Gavin Stone is that changeup. So when he's struggling to locate it, when he's struggling to get that changeup in the zone and throw it for strikes, it's going to be a tough day for him. Even though he's still throwing the sinker, he's still throwing, you know, the four seam, and he has some other stuff that he can offer. Gavin Stone, definitely his success a lot of times revolves around the changeup. So the Dodgers, they got behind again. It was another one of those deals to where you felt like, hey, you're scrapping back. The offense is trying to be scrappy. And then, boom, the Mets hit a home run late, and then it gets out of reach. And the Dodgers lose again, and it's just like, oh, my gosh. It's just one of those deals to where it's just very frustrating. It's kind of demoralizing. I mean, it's Saturday. You felt a little bit demoralized, and then that brought you into Sunday. And the great part of Sunday is, hey, Andy Páez, he hits the double and the home run in the fifth inning, both of them on the sinker. He took the sweeper and, I believe, a slider on his first hit, the double, definitely sitting on a fastball. He was waiting for the first fastball that he got, and the first fastball he got, he hit a double, then he ambushed another sinker, so both hits in that fifth inning for him, both the double and the home run came on the sinker. So, hey, it was good to see him get going. And, hey, that's what rookies can do for you. People get excited about them. It's just something they haven't seen. It's not just your normal routine. It's something different. People get excited about the fact that it's just something different to begin with. Andy Páez is a prospect that Dodgers fans have been hearing a lot about. He's somebody that got off to a huge start. So when he does something like that, it really shoots a lot of energy into your team, and the Dodgers had a couple of doubles after that. And so it was just, I mean, an eight spot. That was just an absolute great inning. And so, hey, I'll tell you what, Tyler Glasnow, we always talk about he's acting like an ace. And when you say that, you just assume you mean, oh, yeah, he's nasty, he's dirty, guys can't hit him, he can throw the ball 100 miles an hour, he has over 7-foot extension, he has the curveball that's absolute devastating, wipeout elite, and all of that is true. But really, when it comes down to it, what an ace is supposed to do for you, he's supposed to say, hey, boys, I know we've been struggling, no big deal, give me the ball and let's go kick somebody's ass. That's what an ace is supposed to make a team feel like. I can't really explain it, but it's just amazing how when a certain pitcher is pitching, the team plays different. There's a different vibe to the team. There's a different way the team shows up to the clubhouse. There's a different way they take BP. It's just a whole different mentality to where the team that day literally does everything they do with the thought process of, oh, boys, we're winning today. Today's going to be a good day. We got our dude on the bump. We got Tyler Glasnow on the bump. That's how he is making this team feel. Like whenever he pitches, they're bulletproof. They are invincible. And because of that, they play better. And he did that for the Dodgers today. Hey, you're reeling. You've lost a couple. It's been frustrating. I use the word demoralizing. Give me the ball. Let me put an end to all this. And we're going to go win a game, boys. We're going to have a good off day. And then we're going to see what we can do from there. So Tyler Glasnow, the best part of all of it is that he did that from an emotional perspective for this team. So that made it really nice. Hey, you only had to cover one inning out of your bullpen. So if you're to say there was a positive to this weekend, it was that it ended up so well on Sunday. If you're going to win one game, the last game's the best one to win, because then at least it leaves you with somewhat of a decent taste in your mouth as you leave the series. Then you only had to cover one inning with your bullpen. So you have the off day. So going into Tuesday, you should be totally fresh and ready to go as the Dodgers look to start playing a little bit better. Hey, you look up, though, and you're still in first place. You're still above 500. You're one game in first place ahead of the San Diego Padres, who are a half game ahead of the Diamondbacks. So you're a game and a half ahead of the Diamondbacks, and you're 2.5 games ahead of the San Francisco Giants. So you've lost three home series in a row. I use the word demoralizing. You feel like just about everything that could go wrong as far as when you look at this team and you go, what are some of the things that could cause this team not to be as good as we want them to be? It seems like all of those aspects of the team have caused the team to lose in the last 9 games. So from that aspect, it just seems like what could go wrong has, like everything that this team could do to be bad, they have done. You've done all that. It's been frustrating. You don't feel like you're playing like you should, and you're still in first place over the San Diego Padres. So it's all in how you want to look at it. I mean, all of these stretches always are. It's kind of like if you're, you know, when you're facing another team and you have an 0-for-4 hitter and then a 4-for-4 hitter. Some guys would say, man, I don't want to throw that 0-for-4 guy because that dude is due, right? Some guys would say, I would rather face the 4-for-4 guy because odds would tell me he's due to get out. On the flip side of that, other guys would rather just take it for the surface and they'd say, well, he's 0-for-4, let's throw to him, he's struggling. Or he's 4-for-4, let's not pitch to him because he is absolutely mashing the ball right now. You can get in a dugout and you'll hear both sides of that almost 50-50 split right down the middle. So it's all in how you want to look at it. You could look at it like, boy, the Dodgers aren't playing good. They have all these holes. They have a lower floor. That's another thing. I didn't think the Dodgers' floor actually would be this low. That's a little bit disappointing for me. But you could say, well, the Dodgers aren't playing good. They have a lower floor than I thought they would be, which means there's going to be a little bit more unpredictability in the playoffs and all that. Or you could look at it as in a positive light, and you could say, hey, guys, not doing all that, not playing all that great. Seems like everything's going wrong. Still in first place. Wait till we actually do start putting everything together, and then we're going to really start creating separation at that point. If we can stay in first place playing like this, then all is well. So it's all in how you want to look at it. And obviously, Dodgers fans and this team is all in. Dodgers fans, they want to win every game, rightfully so. If you're not happy about this homestand, that is great. You shouldn't be. That means you care. It also means that you have higher expectations than getting beat in 3 series in a row, including the Padres. It means you have higher expectations than that. Both of those scenarios are great. But I still think you can be in that world and still exist in a world to where you go, yeah, I have higher expectations than that. I'm not very happy about the way this is going. But having said that, here's the silver lining. We're still in first place. We're not playing very well. And so whenever we do start doing all these things properly, everything is going to be great. I think you can live in both of those worlds, and that's kind of where I am at right now. So, hey, there was a lot of great action down on the farm, and we are going to cover that. So, hey, let's not waste more time. Let's get right to it, and let's take a trip down on the farm. So we're going to start our Down on the Farm segment, and as we always do, single A, Rancho Cucamonga, and you're actually looking at Carlos Duran, who was in high A whenever we took this video here. But he actually, I'm going to show you several different videos so you can see his nice breaking ball there. He has just fought injury after injury after injury, Tommy John and all that, but he is back and he threw two innings for Rancho Cucamonga. And what I want you to notice about him is his size. He is, I believe, 6'7". Don't quote me on that, but I think if I'm off, it's only by an inch or two. Very long and tall. And then look at his paws. And then here's his changeup. That is a nice pitch. So it looks like it's falling out of the sky. See how that changeup tumbles, but it doesn't tumble so much that he can't get that ball in the strike zone. So Carlos Duran, don't forget, this is a guy actually I have. Here is some of his curveballs. And then see how he pauses right there? I like that, because then that thing just drops out of the sky. No doubt about it. A lot of break for Carlos Duran. Look at that dirty curveball there. That is just simply filthy. Here's another one coming up. Don't forget, he was one of the biggest pitching prospects in the Dodgers organization until he had his Tommy John, until he tried to come back a couple different times, couldn't make it, went back on the shelf. Here's his fastball slider combo here for Rancho Cucamonga. See how that fastball has some arm side tail to it. So there is your right turn, and then right there is another fastball, his two seam that turns right, and then look at that slider. That is just absolutely a nasty slider. Here's a fastball with some sink, and then here is going to be some fastball with some arm side run with the sinker to it that you saw just a minute ago. So the right turn to the sinker, then the left right there, there's that right turn, then the left turn to that slider, combined with this size, and then combined with the fact that he has that unique motion where he pauses at the top of it. And again, he's always been an extremely talented and big prospect in the past. He is back and healthy, and he is throwing with the Dodgers. So this is shortstop infield prospect Wilman Diaz, and what I like about him, he has very flat hands coming through the zone, and as you can see right there, he absolutely loves playing the game of baseball. Here's another look at him right here. See how flat that swing is and using the big part of the field. He is a guy that early in his career, no doubt about it, we're going to back this up and take a look at the swing path. See how, look at that. See how he's at 0 degree slot right there. Now he's in his hands are still above the ball, which is going to allow him to turn that top end down to the ball right there and hit the baseball very, very well to the middle part of the field. Another prospect that has been a big prospect in this organization, point blank though, struggled to find the offensive game. Took him a while to get to Rancho. Last year went on a really, really, really long, nice offensive streak. And so it's all about offensive consistency for Wilman Diaz. But you can see his setup. I mean, as I back this up, there's not a whole, see how he just puts it. He doesn't really even lift his leg. I mean, watch his load right here with his front foot. Just kind of picks it up, puts it back down. Everything is very, very simple. So that should be a swing that he can duplicate. We will see if Wilman Diaz can become a consistent offensive player, because we know the defense is there. We know the positive energy there is there. The Dodgers love that as part of their culture. You can see he has a whole lot of fun playing the game. So I wanted to highlight Wilman Diaz. So as we go through the summer, we'll see how consistent he becomes swinging the bat. Thought we'd check in with Josue De Paula before we moved on to High A Great Lakes and how he's doing on the season. Had a couple of hits on the day today. Josue De Paula so far on the season is hitting .241 for the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, and he has an OPS of .687. So not quite to his standards yet. Hey, it's a long season though. He'll get it going. I like the way that he hits the ball the other way. Matter of fact, he has hits in 4 games in a row. He has multi-hit games in 2 out of his last 3. So Josue De Paula is starting to heat up for the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. So the couple of guys as we move up to the high A level, high A Great Lakes, that I wanted to highlight that we have not highlighted yet. We're going to highlight Noah Miller. We've talked about him before. We've also talked about Kyle Nevin that you're seeing on the screen here. Kyle is the son of Phil Nevin, and he is just absolutely hitting the baseball very, very well right now also Junior Garcia, and we're also going to talk a little bit about Christian Suarez, maybe touch on a little bit of Jonathan Edwards as well, but definitely wanted to get back to Kyle Nevin, who went 1-for-2 today, was on base 4 times. He has hits in 10 out of his last 11 games, and he has hits in all but 2 games so far on this season. So Kyle Nevin, he's long, he stays inside the ball, he has power to all fields, and again, he has the bloodlines. I know I've mentioned this a couple of times. He has the bloodlines that scouts and organizations love. You can, let's actually take a look at that, at Kyle Nevin's swing from the open face side right there. See how he's a little bit different. He strides forward. As his foot comes forward, his hands go back. That's called walking your hands away from your, walking your body away from your hands. And this knob should end up pointing down to the catcher. See that? And then it's just simple. It's right here. Look at that, that path right there. Let me back that up just a touch. His hands are actually going to just come right through here and then lift on the front. Watch the path of his hands. Boom. That's absolutely perfect, and especially for a tall guy. And he, I like how he tilts out over the plate. He gets out over the plate, and he is just, when he is on, I saw him a lot of Baylor. He's super consistent. He wears out that right center field gap. And, hey, he can pull on a ball and hit a home run to the pull side. This is a guy, again, that has a lot of offensive skill. He plays first base. We've seen him do that. He is versatile. He can play the outfield too. As a matter of fact, when I interviewed Bubba Aline, the one thing that Bubba Aline said was, of course, when Bubba Aline was at Maryland, he was a Big Ten Player of the Year. Maryland actually played Baylor in Bubba Aline's last year at Maryland. Their first series was at Baylor, and he remembers watching Kyle Nevin. His first impression of Kyle Nevin was that he went over the right field wall and robbed a home run. So this is a very athletic outfield first base type guy in Kyle Nevin. So Noah Miller, I know I've had a question. Hey, is Noah Miller the shortstop of the future? Or is he going to stay at shortstop? What are you going to do with Jordan Thompson, Alex Freeland, all that? Well, how about this? He won the Gold Glove for infielders last year in 2023 in the minors. So Noah Miller, yes, he is probably the best part of his game is defensively. He is a very, very, very good defensive infielder, and his offensive game is starting to come around. Now, you got to remember, at this high A level, it is very cold in Michigan this time of year, so it's not abnormal for guys to struggle with that cold. But Noah Miller has hits in 4 games in a row, hit the ball to all fields. He's a guy that, again, is going to play great defense. He's going to slap the ball around. And check this out. The best part of his offensive game is that he just simply figures out a way to get on base. He walks. He gets base hits. He does whatever he has to. Matter of fact, Noah Miller has been on base in all but 2 games this year. So great defense, getting on base. Offense is coming around. Great energy for Noah Miller. So this is Junior Garcia, and what you're seeing there, that's 110 miles an hour. The thing about him, remember this, Junior Garcia, he goes on long, long heaters where he gets really hot and gets a lot of hits and games in a row, and he can absolutely hit the ball very, very hard. 110 mile an hour single, he also paired that today with a home run over the left field wall, and he had 3 hits. He had hits in all of the last 3 games against West Michigan. But, hey, you're going to have hot and cold streaks. So what's really important about Junior Garcia, it's the exit velos. It's that and his ability to get very, very, very hot. If you remember last year, he got hot and he was playing very good offense. You might say, oh, yeah, Junior Garcia, I remember him. Let's actually look, see how simple that swing is. I remember him. What happened to Junior Garcia? Well, if you remember, early in the season last year, we're going to get back to that open face swing here in just a second. He actually got hit in the face by a fastball. And, man, that see how he's a zero-degree slot? And I want you to notice, again, see how the hands are above the baseball at zero-degree slot. Now, what's that going to do? As this ball continues to decline at 20 degrees, now all he has to do is turn that barrel with the top end down to the baseball, and you get 110 miles an hour. Just like that. But yeah, he got hit in the face. Man, not only, I mean, it shattered bones and all that. So he had to physically recover from that. But hey, I've messaged him a couple of times about it. yes, it is a huge mental recovery as well. It appears to me like Junior Garcia is all the way back. So the last guy we're going to talk about, this is Jonathan Edwards. Just kind of put him in the back of your brain. He's not anywhere as close to Major League ready, although that's a pretty dirty change up. He's not anywhere as close to that. He still doesn't throw near enough strikes. His execution still is not nearly close to Major League quality. Not trying to throw shade, not trying to throw any of that. Just trying to explain that this guy has come a long, long ways. This is a guy that at times has really struggled to find the strike zone for long periods of time. And to his credit, to the organization's credit, they have continued to believe in him. He's continued to believe in himself, and he has continued to work. And because of that, he's taken incremental steps forward. And now he's to the point to where he is in the trust tree of Dave Anderson. Dave can throw him out there, rely on him to get the ball in the strike zone and get outs. Because right there, you've seen it, that changeup and that fastball out of his 6'7" frame. If they can harness the strike zone with this guy, you got something. I trust you, you do. Hey, if the Dodgers didn't believe that they could fix this guy, for one, and if they didn't believe that he was worth fixing, this guy would have been gone a long, long time ago when he was struggling to throw strikes with Rancho Cucamonga. He's been at the lower levels of the minor leagues for a long time. Again, credit to him for continuing to grind. As I always say, everybody's timetable is different. So, hey, who knows when Jonathan Edwards will totally arrive, but he is taking a lot of great steps in the right direction. So we're going to move now up to the AA Tulsa level, and I actually was at this game and got to see Orlando Ortiz Mayer throw. I'd seen him in person a couple times before, but, man, I'll tell you what, he looked a little bit different. Of course, it was really cold at Wichita, but his fastball was very firm. It was to the low part of the zone. It moved very well. And I tell you what, he is the master. If you need a reference, just think of Orlando Ortiz as the AA version of Landon Knack. He's going to throw a million strikes. The ball's always going to be moving. He's going to have great location, and he's going to have about 18 different pitches. And you see that you've already seen about four or five different pitches, all in different locations. So he's going to have a whole bunch of different pitches. He's going to throw all those pitches for strikes. He's going to play the odds. Great catch there, Austin Beck. That was a fantastic catch. And he's just going to move the ball away from barrels. And the next thing you know, it's going to be the sixth inning, just like he did the other night, the night I was there in Wichita. You're going to look up, and it's the sixth inning, and all your bullpen has to do is cover three innings. So Orlando Ortiz Mayer, what do you need to remember about him? He is the AA version of Landon Knack. A lot of different pitches, movement, location. More so than anything, this dude is absolutely an innings eater. Orlando Ortiz Mayer. First time I have ever gotten to see Sauron Lau in person. I'll tell you what, he's listed as 6'2" and under 200 pounds. No possible way he is actually under 200 pounds. His physical, I'm telling you, I was probably 40 feet away from the pitcher's mound where our seats were at. His physical presence was noticeable. I was like, dang, who's that? That's Sauron Lau. That dude's way, I'd never seen him in person. I was like, that dude is way bigger than I thought he would. And I'll tell you another thing. You know, there's velo, and then there's velo. And what I mean by that is some guys look good on the gun, but it's right out of their hand, and the ball quickly decelerates as it gets to the catcher. This guy's ball does not decelerate. I'm telling you, man, the last 4 or 5 feet to the catcher seems to really, really explode, which tells me I've never seen the metrics on him, but I'll bet you the spin rate is really good on Sauron Lau, because I'm telling you, man, that ball does not decelerate, and that tells you he has a lot of spin on it. That slider has always been a plus-plus pitch for him, and then he's also had a lot of arm side movement. See that slider there? That's a really nice pitch. And he always just naturally just has movement to the right. That pitch right there, that's natural for him. He doesn't have to try to do that. He just throws the ball, and that happens. And then that left turn right there is really nice. Hey, I can't tell you how impressed I was with Sauron Lau when he walked out. I didn't know who he was. I mean, I knew who Sauron Lau was, obviously, but I'd never seen him in person. So when I saw him walk out from a physical perspective, I didn't automatically go, oh, there's Sauer and Lyle. I was like, huh, who's that? Oh my gosh, that's Sauer and one of those type deals. So I wanted to make sure and mention him. There's Jose Ramos, by the way, who hit two home runs on Friday. And as you can tell, it was very cold and he made two really sweet catches. I have them both on my social media if you want to check them out. So the last guy on Double A that I wanted to cover is Michael Hobbs. There's a good fastball. That's about 93, 94. He's not going to run it up there 100 miles an hour or anything, but that right there. See that little slider pitch? There's one shape to his breaking ball. Then there's the second shape that has a little bit more tumble to it. Now you're getting ready to see him really drop one right there. That is a really nice pitch. So Michael Hobbs, all-time saves leader at St. Mary's, played on the same St. Mary's team. I mentioned this on the last show as Chris Campos. Look at that dirty, dirty curveball. Absolutely plus-plus, elite, elite breaking stuff. Plus-plus competitor, all-time, like I said, all-time saves leader at St. Mary's. So when you say Michael Hobbs, they call him Hobbsy. What do you need to know about him? That big-time breaking ball, serious, serious competitor, and he loves high-leverage moments. So, hey, as we check back in with Michael Hobbs, we'll keep watching that big curveball over the summer, and we'll keep checking in with him. So as we move now to the highest level of the minor leagues, the step that is one step below LA, this is Eduardo Salazar. Now, what's significant about him? He actually just got brought back down. He got brought up to LA. He was more so depth for one of the games earlier. He was just one of those guys, hey, if they need an extra pitcher, hey, let's have him on roster. Let's send him back down the next day. So he is definitely, the Dodgers have already shown, the guy you're seeing here, see that? That's a changeup there, but he has that two-seam slider and then the changeup and then a curveball as well. This is a professional pitcher that has major league innings. He has a right turn to him, and the Dodgers have already shown he is a guy that they believe can be good depth for this club. He's had some tremendous outings. He's just pitched absolutely lights out with Oklahoma City. Again, that sinker is about 93, 94. It's not going to run it up there 100 miles an hour. But again, we talked about just a second ago, Orlando Ortiz Mayer. There is your AAA version of Orlando Ortiz Mayer, your AAA version of Landon Knack. Let me replay that. This is a guy that fills up the strike zone. This is a guy that's going to turn the ball right. He's going to turn the ball left. He's going to ride the top of the zone. Then he's also going to carry the bottom of the zone as well. And he is going to, kind of similar to Nabil Kreismat that I just talked to. And that interview is on the YouTube there if you want to go watch that. Kind of like Nabil Kreismat, he's just going to give you a professional outing. And so whenever you bring up a guy that provides depth like this, you want one of two things out of your depth pieces. You either want a guy like Denelson Lamet to where he has a big-time fastball, big-time carry on it, big-time spin rate, to where if he comes up and just throws strikes, he's going to get outs. You either want that guy or you want the professional pitcher that's just going to go up and turn the ball and move the ball, locate the ball, and miss barrels and just throw strikes and at least give your team a chance to win the game. And you're thinking, hey, if they just give up four or five runs, I will take that every day and twice on Sundays. So you want one of two of those guys. So at the AAA level, they have Denelson Lamet, who can throw the ball through the roof. At times, they've had Kyle Hurd, and they have guys like that. And then they also have guys, well, Tanner Dodson can also throw the ball through the roof. Then they also have guys like Nabil Kreismat and Eduardo Salazar that can really be a little bit more finer detailed as far as location and movement. So in their depth pool, they have added different types of pitchers. It's just absolutely brilliant how they work out these rosters. So this is Eduardo Salazar. Remember that name because he's already been brought up to LA once. So the last guy we're going to talk about right here, Kevin Padlow. He is a guy that has really, really nice exit velos. He gives you a really professional at bat, and he hits the baseball very, very hard. He reminds me of a guy that the Dodgers had in the organization a couple of years ago in Matt Davidson. Matt Davidson, if you remember, I believe was a second-round draft pick, if not a first-round draft pick. He was in the Dodgers org a couple of years ago, ended up going to the D-backs, had a great year for AAA Oklahoma City. But Padlow is a guy that, hey, if you need a first baseman, third baseman, a guy that maybe can bring you instant offense, he would be a guy I think the Dodgers would give a look at. So, hey, Chris Oakey's also on this roster. And so you have, you know, we talked about the veteran type pitchers that the Dodgers like to have as depth. I think definitely Kevin Padlow is one of those guys that the Dodgers would strongly consider if they ended up needing a corner type infielder that could provide them some exit velo, some power, and some thump into this lineup. So let's continue to monitor Kevin Padlow. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed today's show. We had some guys. We're going to try to cover different guys down on the farm. So by the end of the summer, you know, we've covered everybody multiple times, but hopefully in a way that actually digests and can sink in, and we can follow the progress of all of these guys. So I hope you enjoyed today's show, and I hope you tune in to our next show, which will be, well, Austin's actually going to go live tonight. So check in with Austin's live show tonight. And then tomorrow we're going to have a hot take. And then we're going to have our show again on Wednesday morning and our live show on Wednesday. And it starts all over again, just like baseball season always does. So until next time, I want to thank you for tuning in and say, go Dodgers!